Grand Slam for Masters!
It's time for Blessed to Play on EWTN Radio, uncovering the role that faith plays in the lives of sports professionals from around the country. And now, here's your host, Ron Meyer.
Fire, score!
My guest today was a big and steadfast target at tight end for the Boston College Eagles. Scott Gieselman was a three-year starter, was a vital part of the lightning-like passing attack of the nationally ranked Boston College teams of the mid-1980s. He's a three-time honoree as an All-East and All-ECAC tight end, and he was inducted into the Boston College Varsity Club Athletic Hall of Fame in 2011. Here to talk about his college career at BC and also his pro career as well is Scott Gieselman. Scott, welcome to Blessed to Play.
Ron, thank you very much. It's as I was talking to one of your other guests about this, I remarked to him that, you know, I don't really consider myself in the category of most of your guests and the people that you've interviewed based on my experience and my career. But there are definitely some things that combine the Catholic faith that is critically important to me in my athletic career and career outside of athletics as well. So happy to be here, happy to talk to you, and you do great work and have really enjoyed your show.
Thanks so much. Well, before we talk about football, we have to also talk about basketball when it comes to you, because you had a tremendous talent for the game of basketball. In fact, I think it was probably a toss-up where you were going to go collegially, whether it be playing basketball or playing football, but your talk with Jack McNeil, the then head coach for the Boston College Eagles, kind of cemented the deal, and you decided to go and play football for BC.
I did, and I was recruited for both basketball and football by a number of schools when I was coming out of high school. And, a funny story, I was actually a hockey player in high school, going into high school, and went to a really acclaimed high school hockey program that produced a number of Olympians and college athletes and professional hockey players. And my dad was the one who decided that, he said, you're going to be a basketball player. So he kind of truncated my hockey career. I was, sort of in the skinny kid category coming out of high school. And, most of the schools I was looking at were either Ivy League schools mm-hmm. or some of the small Division III, they call them NESCAC schools, New England Small Colleges. Mm-hmm. And so when the opportunity to go to Boston College came up, it was very late in the recruiting process. Our class was had a terrific 4 years there, but we were not highly recruited athletes, Doug Flutie included, and my roommate Steve Strahan, who played for the Raiders for a number of years. We had great players, but none of us were particularly highly recruited. And as you allude, I was a basketball football guy, so I was decent at it, but it was not something I was highly recruited for.
So let's talk about the journey, because it's always interesting to me, the journey of an athlete, because it doesn't always go according to plan. But once you decided that you would play football, you weren't sold on BC totally. In fact, Scott, you thought about transferring out at one point. I think Jack McNeil, an offensive coordinator, here's the name, Tom Coughlin, told you that your best shot to play at DC was to switch to the offensive line, and you simply just didn't want to do that, did you?
No, sir. So that was my freshman year. As I mentioned, I was sort of a tall, skinny kid. Was really completely unprepared for that leap to major college football, and was built more like a basketball player. So as I my first year was, to say the least, a bit of a challenge. And I think Boston College may have realized that they had made a mistake early on and said, "You got two options. One is you can transfer. This is the end of my freshman year after our spring ball." Mm-hmm. Or you can gain 50 to 70 pounds and move to center or offensive line, which, to me was sort of a death sentence. So I said, I'll work really hard, try to, get in good shape, try to get stronger over the summer. And if I don't make the travel team, our sophomore year, we were opening up against Texas A&M, mm-hmm. in Texas A&M against Jackie Sherrill, who had just signed, record contract for a college coach. So that was a big deal. And if I didn't make that travel team and make the game, then I would leave. And that was sort of the deal I'd cut with our coaches at the time. And so camp came, and I thought I was doing great. It came in great shape. And the week before the A&M game, which was really before school even started, I think it was late August, they moved a freshman who was a linebacker ahead of me. So the die was cast in my view, and it was pretty clear that I needed to go find another school to go to.
Bless the play, Ron Meyer. My guest today is Scott Gieselman. He was a standout tight end for the Boston College Eagles in the mid-80s, played on that team that's infamous for obviously the Doug Flutie Hail Mary against the Miami Hurricanes. So your first pass for a touchdown was against Navy. Then two games later, there was a fortunate coincidence where Jack Bignell and Tom Coughlin knew they had an exceptional leader in the aforementioned Doug Flutie, and they revamped this offense where it's going to be pass happy. This meant an aggressive style, and that means they need a tight end to throw to, and you just became that guy, didn't you? So tell us how you evolved into this offense, and when did you notice that Doug was a special quarterback?
Yeah, I'd grown up next door to him, literally the town next door, and although we didn't know each other coming into it, we'd played on some all-star teams and things like that, and he was always, he was always a tremendous competitor and just a really high quality kid as well. And really the freshman year, I think he was fifth or sixth on the depth chart, and due to some injuries, just kept climbing up the ladder and started playing. I think his first game against Penn State, he threw for 500 yards or something. It was just remarkable. And then by the time our sophomore year started, Tom Coughlin was our offensive coordinator to revamp the offense, had put in a lot of pro style passing offenses. And it was a very dynamic, very read intensive offense for the receivers and the backs.
When you have this connection with your quarterback and like you did with Doug Flutie, how long does it take to get that chemistry? When did you notice that there was something special between you two in that connection?
Yeah, it was really, it was not a straight path for me, Ron, in any way, shape, or form. And I would say for any of your young listeners out there who are athletes, predominantly the advice I would have is just, continue to work and stay with it, because, good things will happen for those who work hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really emblematic of my career, because I was not, after I almost transferred after my at the beginning of my sophomore year, it really was my third year when things started to click. We had graduated a couple of the upperclassmen who were playing ahead of me. And I started to just mature physically and mature as an athlete. And there were a lot of moments getting to there where I was, on my knees going to daily mass. I was just, absolutely distraught over not being able to succeed. So when it finally started to happen, and when I started to play and started to have some success, I just was determined never to get off the field. I was going to play on every down. We had a great running attack as well. And we had some great running backs that played in the NFL had good careers there. We were always known as an offensive line, but I just wanted to be on the field all the time, because I knew if I came off and somebody else made a good play, they may get more playing time. So that was part of it. And I would say the chemistry with Doug, he was so innovative and so creative. And he was so small that I think because I was big, I presented a good target for him. And so I was probably not the first choice on most plays, but I was sort of the guy that kept some plays alive from time to time and could get third down conversions and things like that.
Yeah. What did football teach you? I mean, being in the competitive environment, you're a kid, you're a teenager, you're growing, you're maturing into adulthood. What did football teach you from the team concept, also as an individual player, about yourself?
Well, first, I would say, again, I took a very unconventional path from most of your guests who were, esteemed athletes all through, and then, just were in their zone when they got to college and then went on to the pros. I was not like that. I really was extremely lucky and extremely blessed to be in the position I was in. And so I really took, I would say the concept of, you know, God hates a coward in the book of Revelations was sort of first in my mind, where, you know, taking on a challenge of that level of college football. And we played, you know, when I was there, we played everybody, Clemson, Alabama, Penn State, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, Texas, A&M. We played a really high-end schedule and, you know, achieved a great deal of success. But that was a huge leap from anything I would have, anybody who knew me in high school ever would have thought I was capable of. So I think part of it is just, again, for your younger members in your audience, you know, don't be reluctant to take on big challenges and then use prayer, because God can do great things and will do great things if you're faithful to him. So part of that was just like that. And I would say the other part, you know, football's a hard sport physically. You know, you get beat up, and back in the 80s, you know, you hit almost every day in practice, and you had real preseason camp where you were at camp for 3 or 4 weeks and you hit a lot. And so we had really big and strong and physical teams back then. And so part of it was just grinding through and learning how to grind and how to work. And even after you practiced, go into the weight room, and even after that, you go out in the field and you catch balls. So just, you know, I was my probably the only thing that I was really good at was being able to work and get and improve. And eventually it clicked and it took over. But, you know, for your younger members of the audience, you know, take on those challenges and just keep working through the adversity, because eventually, if you keep working, as I tell my kids all the time, hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. And I think there's, you know, that's one of the things about athletics. It's very emblematic of the way life works, teaches you a lot about how difficult life can be and how to overcome challenges and how to deal with difficult situations and just continue to plow through them.
Yeah, good words there. Scott Gieselman was an all ECAC as a senior and fifth year senior, and finished out his career with 120 catches for over 1,400 yards, an average of 12.4 yards per catch, and 10 TDs. When Blessed to Play returns, we'll talk about the faith life of this Boston College Football Hall of Famer. Scott Gieselman is our guest. Keep it right here. You're listening to Blessed to Play.
Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.
Welcome back to Blessed to Play. Ron Meyer joined today by Scott Gieselman. What a career, folks, he did have at Boston College at the position of a tight end. A remarkable four-year career from 1982 to 85 for the Eagles. 120 career receptions. He's in the Boston College Hall of Fame. He went on in a brief stint in training camp with some NFL teams before he was sidelined with an injury, but he has quite a progression of excellence in athletics, but also in the faith life as well. And Scott, I know faith is an important part of your life. And why don't you talk about how you were formed in the faith early on to where it has brought you today?
Sure. Cradle Catholic, grew up in Massachusetts and was born in upstate New York, but grew up in Massachusetts and, you know, was an altar boy, sort of the, you know, standard 1960s, 70s fair for Catholicism at that time. And, you know, we were all the altar boys were athletes and we all hung out together, and it was a really cool thing to do. And then, you know, like a lot of people, I think as, you know, my parents were product of Catholic schools. And so I had the opportunity to go to a handful of different schools, Ivy League and some, what they call the small Ivies up here, the NESCAC schools. And chose Boston College really is in part because of the faith element. It was certainly, you know, back then not as highly regarded a school as some of the Ivy League schools were and some of the mm-hmm. smaller Ivies were. But I, you know, thought the challenge of high-end athletics was such that, you know, it would present me a big challenge. And then the faith, you know, piece of it was very consistent with how I grew up and the things that were important to me. And so that was that Boston College really tied those two concepts together.
Yeah, so you had this Jesuit experience at Boston College. I know on the football side, there's a priest that's always on the sideline. So there's faith reminders all around you. In fact, I think you said that you even went to Mass on a regular basis while you were at BC, and you get caught up in a kind of a lifestyle that was apart from spirituality. But when do you think you made faith your own? You had all these this Catholic guts. You were formed by your parents. But was there a time where you had to really embrace the faith component on your own?
That was really in college, you know, as I alluded to before, you know, things, it was not a straight line up and to the right for me career-wise. Mm. There were a lot of very dark and very dubious periods where it did not look like things were going to succeed for me as an athlete. And it tends to be, I don't know if you were in the same category as an athlete, but when things aren't going well athletically, that it, the rest of your life usually can be a little bit tricky too. And that was certainly the case for me. So I would say, you know, there were points in the first year or two at Boston College where my faith, you know, which was strong, was never really tested. Things, you know, as you're a little kid and going on and, you know, things kind of work out for you. And then all of a sudden things don't. And so it really forced me to look hard at my faith and what I was doing and how I was executing my faith, if you will. And so I really, you know, decided this was the moment of truth for me and that I had to double down and really put, you know, all my confidence in God to get me through what was a very difficult period for me. So I started going to daily Mass. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out, being a reasonably pretty poorly catechized kid at that time in the 70s, I had to sort of learn from scratch, you know, elements of the faith. Boston College was very helpful in that, being a Jesuit university, but a lot of it was just trying to figure it out. But I think, you know, the Eucharist and going to daily Mass was front and center, and that really got me through. And I would say, if not for the grace of God, things were not going to go, you know, did not look like it was going to work out. And it fortunately worked out. I was very lucky, very blessed. But I would say if not for my faith during those college years, it would not have worked out at all well.
Yeah, something that came to mind, it's that saying that everyone has heard of, that we plan and God laughs, because we think we have control of everything and everything's going to work out to the plan we have. And you came off a All-American, you know, a collegiate football career, being really the best in your biz, you know, one of the best. And then you were drafted in the fourth round by the Patriots. Then you went into Dolphins training camp. And your playing days were curtailed because you had a significant injury, and those hopes and dreams of playing at the professional level are no longer. How did you handle that? Because I talk about on this show a lot identity, and with athletes, a lot of times, because you're the best at what you do and you're being fed all this, how great you are, your identity almost becomes a sport that you're excelling in. And we know now as Christians, as a child of God, that our identity is much greater than that. But how did you deal with that when you knew that your football career was coming to a conclusion?
It was a huge challenge for the reasons you just described. You know, so much of your athletic career and, you know, growing up in Boston, being successful as a team and being a part of that, and we'd get 60 or 70,000 people at our games in college. We played most of our home games at now Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots play, during my last couple of years there. And then going to the Patriots the year after they went to the Super Bowl the first time. And then I got released. I had some injuries as well, shoulder and neck, and they released me. And then I got picked up by Miami. And when I got hurt down there and I had to ultimately have surgery on my neck, it was really the last opportunity I had to play. I tried around the edges to see if I could get on another team's roster. And so I went in a couple of tryouts, but they took a look at my x-rays in my neck and decided it was too risky. So I was fortunate because I was in graduate school my last year while I was playing. And so I continued graduate school. And then went to work on Wall Street and went got a terrific job at Goldman Sachs in the investment banking division, and I ultimately became a partner there over about a 19-year career. So I was very lucky. And again, just paralleling that academic or that athletic mm-hmm. career, you know, Goldman Sachs had no business going there from my academic performance and my experience base, but it turned out pretty well and worked out given, you know, again, thanks to the grace of God. But it was, you know, it was really, in my view, Ron, I think, and you probably heard this from several other of your guests, you know, pride was a problem for me, continues to be a problem for me from time to time. But I think back then it was a real issue. And I think you get, as an athlete, it can overcome you from time to time because you start thinking it's what you're doing as opposed to what God's doing for you. Mm-hmm. And so part of it was addressing some of those pride issues. And I think it helped me grow and get on with life, but it was and have a finality to it. I have a lot of friends who, you know, would every year kind of cycle through. They'd be a practice squad player and then they'd go back for the next year and they'd be a practice squad player and they'd keep trying different teams. And before you knew it, you were spending 6 or 7 years as a journeyman around the NFL, and other sports have this same attribute to them. And I think in some respects, you know, again, you know, God's in charge of all this stuff, but I think he really, you know, knew that the right thing for me was to arrest some of those prides and help me on that. And also give me a clean break where I just couldn't play anymore. And I couldn't try that journeyman career.
Mm-hmm. Blessed to play Ron Meyer. We're chatting once again with Scott Gieselman, a standout career playing tight end for the Boston College Eagles and a standout career as a businessman as well. And Scott, I'm sure some of those pursuit of excellence for, you know, just having a strong character, strong will has helped you out in the business world, but also your faith has helped you to take what the blessings that you have had or made as a businessman into some charitable works as well. I know you started a number of inner city scholarship and Catholic school foundations and have done things at the parish level. So just talk about that charitable giving part of Scott Gieselman.
Well, you know, it pales in comparison to some of your prior guests and what they've done. I just have, you know, I take tithing very seriously and you know, came, I would say, you know, one of the things I just want to make sure your listeners understand, you know, working in Wall Street at that time in the 80s and early 90s was a bit treacherous. It was a dynamic place to work, but it also pulled you in a lot of different directions. And it was very difficult to keep a faith life centered and really keep your life centered on Christ during periods where you were working 80 to 100 plus hours a week and you were doing really, you know, what you thought was really critical work, not curing cancer, but, you know, trying to make a lot of money. And so part of what I realized a little bit later was tithing is a good discipline. And, you know, the tithing has historically been 10% of what you earn. And it took me a while before I started to really figure that out and put that in the center of a practice for me. And my wife, I would say, was very helpful in that because she's, you know, got a very charitable heart. Number one, being married to me requires a fair amount of charity, but you know, it's always been, you know, very important to her as well to give back and take care of those who are less fortunate. So we've been, you know, involved in a number of Catholic organizations around and a lot of educational institutions around as well, where we've tried to give back.
I want to ask your perspective on parenting a child that's an athlete. And I know you have some children who are really good athletes, and we talked about that off air. But what would be the advice that you could have or take from your own experience and to pass that along to parents who are, you know, they want to pursue excellence with their child. They want their kid to be the best that they could be, but to put it in that proper perspective as well.
As I was driving the boys to school this morning, we have three boys, and they're little still. So I'd say when good athletes, they're aspirationally good, going to be good athletes, but they're still working hard to find that window for themselves. But one of the things we talked about, we always go through the 10 commandments or regularly go through the 10 commandments on the way to school. So, you know, first commandments, you know, putting God first, in all you do. So I think if you keep that as a parent, that's been very helpful to both my wife, me, and for me, is just making sure that we put, you know, God first in our life. And when you do that, it tends, everything else kind of follows from there, and it kind of works out. So the kids see that, and they realize that there is something much bigger than a game or a practice or their training or anything else. But and we try to keep it pretty simple with our kids as well. I think it's very easy to get wrapped up in today's world on you know, the success or failure of your kids and what they're doing. But we try to keep it really simple and just focus them on, you know, doing their absolute best. If they put a good effort in, you know, I don't think we've ever talked to any of our kids, they're hockey players, but we've never talked to any of our kids about goals or any particular achievement like that. It's always about, you know, going out and doing your very best, paying attention, doing, you know, following what your coach is and being good teammates, but really just try to focus on that. And if, you know, it's just stunning to me, if you put God first in your life, it's just amazing how the sequence of things of priority sort of fall into place. So that's been important for us.
Well, Scott Gieselman has been our guest, one of the all-time greats at the position of tight end in Boston College football history, and also living a life of faith and a life of virtue and passing that along to his children and those who come in contact with him, for sure. Scott, thanks so much for the time. Really do appreciate it. It was great talking football, especially during this collegiate football season. And also that BC is off to a great start. That's equally as important as well. And thank you for sharing your faith life here too, as well, on Blessed to Play.
Been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Hey, Blessed to Play fans, check us out on the web at blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed2play.com. You can like us on Facebook, hit us up on the platform X at Blessed to Play. For Scott Gieselman, I'm Ron Meyer. Thanks so much for joining us right here on Blessed to Play.
You've been listening to Blessed to Play with host Ron Meyer on the EWTN Global Catholic Network. If you have a question or comment about today's show, feel free to email us at info@blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed, the number 2, play.com. You can also connect with the show on the web at www.blessedtoplay.com. Again, that's blessed, the number 2, play.com. Join us again next time for Blessed to Play on the EWTN Global Catholic Network.